Our reading today is a compilation of quotes by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It comes from a little compilation I found online called 9 MLK Quotes the Mainstream Media Won't Cite. And there's a little introduction by the author Callie Holloway. This is found on alternet.org. It's a very short, few-sentence introduction, which I abridged a little anyway. So she says, Martin Luther King Jr. was far more radical than the cherry-picked lines from his speeches and books would suggest. By 1966, King had become an outspoken opponent of liberal white complicity in white supremacy, of American imperialism and warmongering, of the capitalist system itself. Here are several examples of MLK's most radical statements. Why is equality so assiduously avoided? Why does white America delude itself, and how does it rationalize the evil it retains? The majority of white Americans consider themselves sincerely committed to justice for the Negro. They believe that American society is essentially hospitable to fair play and to steady growth toward a middle-class utopia embodying racial harmony. But unfortunately, this is a fantasy of self-deception and comfortable vanity. Another, but it is not enough for me to stand before you tonight and condemn riots. This obviously on the heels of some of the serious unrest of the time. It would be morally irresponsible for me to do that without at the same time condemning the contingent, intolerable conditions that exist in our society. These conditions are the things that cause individuals to feel that they have no alternative than to engage in violent rebellions to get attention. And I must say tonight that a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice and humanity. Moving on, again, we have deluded ourselves into believing the myth that capitalism grew and prospered out of the Protestant work ethic and sacrifice. The fact is that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of black slaves and continues to thrive on the exploitation of the poor, both black and white, both here and abroad. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. Whites, it must frankly be said, are not putting in a similar mass effort to re-educate themselves out of their racial ignorance. It is an aspect of their sense of superiority that the white people of America believe they have so little to learn. The reality of substantial investment to assist Negroes into the 20th century, adjusting to Negro neighbors and genuine school integration is still a nightmare for all too many white Americans. These are the deepest causes for contemporary abrasions between the races. Loose and easy language about equality, resonant resolutions about brotherhood fall pleasantly on the ear. But for the Negro, there is a credibility gap that cannot be overlooked. He remembers that with each modest advance, the white population promptly voices the argument that the Negro has come far enough. Each step forward accents an ever-present tendency to backlash. The evils of capitalism are as real as the evils of militarism and the evils of racism. The problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. So those are the words of Dr. King. I'll return to some of those in a few minutes. Not easy words to hear, necessarily, some of them. But we need to listen nonetheless. That's part of our job as Unitarian Universalists and as people of faith and as people of goodwill. Thank you. So we're talking about the social and spiritual vision of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. today, and specifically, and I think uncommonly, how different levels of consciousness or awareness that people hold affect how they perceive and react to this vision. This level of perception then determines how eager people are to implement it or conversely and all too regularly oppose it. Let me restate that more simply. If one holds higher developmental levels of intercultural awareness, they'll likely understand and react to King's vision or anything concerning multiculturalism in certain ways. People who reside at lower levels will see and react to such things in very different ways. And there's a tool or instrument that scholars have developed that calculates these levels. Lucky us. It's called the Intercultural Development Inventory, or IDI. It measures people's central orientation to cultural difference and breaks the results into five, or sometimes split into six, stages of development. Let's run through these stages of the Intercultural Developmental Inventory. Now, as a reminder, I wrote about these in my February 2015 newsletter article, so of course some of you don't need any reminding whatsoever, right? But for the rest of us, the lowest stage is denial, which is basically not noticing much cultural difference around you and maintaining separation from others who are different. Now, it's fairly common in the developed world these days to be in complete denial. A couple hundred years ago, that might have been more likely because we were much more tribalized. But it can express itself these days as kind of indifference. Like if you're a rural farmer in China, and there are still some all over the world in pockets that have never had much outside Western influence or modern influence, it's irrelevant to you. About you're not dealing with anything like that. So that's the first stage, denial, or what I might call indifference. Number two is, and this is a big one, polarization. There's two ways this expresses itself. One is very unusual. It's called reversal. That means where you take on another culture and you think they're the greatest culture and your own culture is not so great, and you sort of adopt the mannerisms and all that and sort of flip into wanting to be part of a different culture. That's called reversal. But the main way that polarization expresses itself is defensiveness. It's characterized by a strong commitment to one's own thoughts and feelings about culture and cultural difference. You're aware of other cultures, but with a very incomplete understanding and probably fairly strong negative judgments about some of them. You judge other ways of being as less valid and less valuable than one's own. And you polarize in terms of us versus them. Positive for us, negative for them. And then you support formal or informal practices of exclusion to keep the, quote, minority or other out of your circles. So that's called polarization. Both denial and polarization are, in both denial and polarization, encounters with difference in gender, mainly fear. It also tends to deny the humanity of members of the different group and can lead to violence against perceived threats. Polarization can be subtle or extreme. White nationalists marching in the streets are firmly entrenched in extreme polarization. The third stage is a transitional stage, and it's an important one. It's called minimization. And that's where you stop putting down other cultures. People you decide are people under the skin no matter what, pretty much like you. We're all human after all is the basic attitude. And it's a huge advance from polarization, and it's a comfortable place for people to be who are working in a global environment and have to deal with all sorts of cultures. But it still tends to assume under the surface that you understand a situation in the same way that someone from another culture should or does. And it so can kind of be unwittingly arrogant or condescending. Like, oh, that's interesting. And here's the way things really are. And it still negates or at least overlooks the value of true diversity. That's minimization. The fourth stage is called acceptance. In acceptance, people are aware of their own cultural identity, and they also more fully accept that there are other valid and valuable ways of perceiving and interacting with the world. You understand that people from other cultures are as complex as yourself and seek opportunities to learn more about them and how they view life issues. So people at the level of acceptance see value in different viewpoints, but don't yet know how to adapt their own behavior when confronted with these differences. And that's the fifth stage, called adaptation. Adaptation is the last and the highest stage, and here you recognize the value of having more than one cultural perspective available to you. Here a person is able to really take on the perspective of another culture and act in culturally appropriate ways outside of their own culture, while at the same time maintaining their core cultural identity. So you can really enter into and be with others and yet be yourself. So to recap the stages of the IDI, or intercultural developmental inventory, from lowest to highest, we have denial, polarization, minimization, acceptance, and finally adaptation. Denial and polarization are considered ethnocentric or monocultural. In denial, one's own culture is seen as the only culture. In polarization, it's the better culture. And again, encounters with difference mostly cause fear and can lead to violence against perceived threats. Minimization is the transition stage, while acceptance and adaptation are called ethno-relative or intercultural perspectives, in that one's own culture is seen as equal among many others. And in these last higher stages, there's a positive view of most cultural differences, and people mainly want to be inclusive of others, which isn't to say that you can't critique aspects of another culture. That's fair, too. You don't have to wholeheartedly say, well, that's great. So there is that. I just want to make that differentiation. So with that as our framework, the IDI stages, let's return to Martin Luther King's vision of a whole, just, multicultural society in the form of a short quiz. It has three questions. Ready? In the 1960s, at what level were the white people with the water cannons, batons, police dogs, shotguns, and lynching ropes? Not to mention others with fury in their eyes and hatred on their lips. Polarization, big time, just locked in. Us versus them, better versus worse, all that. And at what levels were the white people who in the 1960s went to the American South as civil rights workers, who marched in Selma and Washington and elsewhere, at least at minimization or acceptance, right? Some probably at full adaptation, but certainly not in polarization, right? And by the way, not surprisingly perhaps, research shows that the majority of Unitarian Universalists are at least at minimization or higher, which does not mean we don't have our work to do. But at least we're at a sort of base level that's helpful. Okay, last question. Question number three of the quiz. Prefaced by me saying that while there's always the possibility, or at least a distant prayer, of a spiritual breakthrough that suddenly jumps someone's level up a notch or two, at what level is a certain president of a major Western nation who this week insults the inhabitants of the entire continent of Africa and other majority black or brown lands in a most foul-mouthed and ignorant way? What level? Polarization, clearly. You don't say those things if you're not at that level. You don't. And that wouldn't occur to you. All right, so we're kind of playing with this. But I invite you to take a moment. If you heard about those comments or something else similar, get in touch with whatever emotions you might feel about the fact that as we near the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination this April, we have a so-called leader in the White, underline White House, who would utter such statements. Take a moment. Now, if you choose, I invite you to call out a word or two that best describes your dominant emotion. And if you like, do it in a voice that reflects the feeling. Okay, I'll repeat these. Disgust. Appalled. Embarrassed. Shocked. Disappointment. Despair. Sad. Treason. It's not a feeling, but okay. Okay, thank you. All understandable. I'll add one, enraged. So now, stay with your main feeling, or feelings if different waves are hitting you. And then without trying to displace that, I want you to add or overlay one. You could call it by various names. Pity, sympathy, just try. Care, leniency, compassion, mercy. And this part is not a quiz or a test, so without judging anything, just experience what it's like to open to that possibility. Because this is a house of peace, one that proclaims the inherent dignity of every person and seeks to engender greater understanding and compassion both inside and outside of ourselves. So here's Donald J. Trump, like many of his supporters, deeply mired in fearful and ignorant polarization, casting half-witted slurs as he's done so many times before. And to boil our emotions down, it angers and or hurts those who are at higher levels of self and cultural awareness, and are thus capable of perceiving greater nuance and complexity. It hurts. And here's the thing. It's unlikely that he or those like him are going to change. It's not his fault. If he could do any better, he would. We don't need to hate him. No one needs to hate him. He is where he is and who he is, and again, he's unlikely to change. So what does that mean? That means that who needs to change? We need to change in two ways, as I see it. First, we need to change out as many elected and appointed officials as possible, including the president, meaning that we swap people who are stuck in polarization for people who aren't. And some of that, I think, is really possible now, coming up. But it only goes so far. The second way that we need to change is more fundamental. We need to change out, again, a broken and rigged political and economic system for one more capable of bringing forth Dr. King's beloved community into being, a society that works for all, or at least for most of the time. Because if our country, any country, mostly works for all of its inhabitants, those who cannot rise to more inclusive levels of intercultural awareness just don't matter as much. When they truly feel secure, mainly economically, they're far less likely to grab torches and do damage. And when those who have been historically marginalized and oppressed feel relatively secure, there's a lot less unrest there too. Our earlier reading was a series of quotes from Dr. King. One said that many white Americans, quote, believe that American society is essentially hospitable to fair play and to steady growth toward a middle-class utopia embodying racial harmony. But unfortunately, this is a fantasy of self-deception and comfortable vanity. Here, Dr. King was visionary. Because since those words were uttered a half century ago, instead of steady growth toward a middle-class utopia, we have seen the opposite. A concentration of wealth and in a steady erosion that's approaching implosion of the middle class, and a society moving ever closer to one with islands of vast wealth in the midst of a roiling ocean of poverty. Then King got even more radical. Here are some separate but related statements we also heard. Again, we have deluded ourselves into believing the myth that capitalism grew and prospered out of the Protestant work ethic and sacrifice. The fact is that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of black slaves and continues to thrive on the exploitation of poor, both black and white, both here and abroad. The evils of capitalism are as real as the evils of militarism and of racism. The problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. Absorb that one. And amid my own troubled feelings about Trump's comments, which after insulting other lands included him reportedly saying, we should have people from places like Norway, I both laughed and took some heart at a tweeted response by a Norwegian, which said, as a Norwegian, the idea that anyone from Norway would consider moving to the USA strikes me as rather harebrained. Other tweets pointed out that Norwegians enjoy universal health care, free higher education, lengthy paid parental leave, and a host of other social benefits. And to echo and summarize Martin Luther King Jr., guess what? We will not have a nation capable of embodying racial harmony until we have one that embodies economic harmony. The issue of white and black and other colors is important, but now the issue of rich and poor, which has always been there but hasn't been as widespread or extreme since the Gilded Age and the Great Depression, is even more central and urgent. Again, in King's words, the evils of capitalism are as real as the evils of militarism and the evils of racism. The problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. We named some feelings earlier: disgust, anger, embarrassment, grief. And then we added some: pity, sympathy, compassion, mercy. Now I want you to take deep into your heart and soul a third set: determined, committed, resolved, purposeful, resolute, tenacious, etc. You may already be clear on how to apply these, or that may need some thought, but to start, latch on with all your strength and courage to your determined heart's desire. A desire to bring forth on this continent a renewed nation. Because the times, they are a-changing again, and people like you and like me are change makers for the better. Because as Dr. King put it so powerfully at the foot of the Washington Monument, we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. Blessed be and amen.